holy sweet mother of God shit.
Hello, hello, hello.
What the hell are you doing?
I hope no one's eating dinner.
The next best thing, every Monday night from 10 until midnight on Radio Free Brooklyn. Fun for everyone except for...
Dear Jesus.
Something like that.
Thank you all for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Thanks for listening to The Next Best Thing. I'm your host, Jonathan B. Lerner, keeping you company every Monday night from 10 until midnight right here on Radio Free Brooklyn. We have a great guest coming in tonight, the first live in-studio guest in quite a while. John William Schiffbauer, the young Republican, returns to the show. But before he gets here, folks, as everyone knows, I'm in the job market. And I interviewed for a job last Tuesday, and then actually, if I'm fully honest, again today, that looked really cool and exciting. In fact, it's the kind of job that I've always said I'd be willing to move anywhere for, even take a massive pay cut to do. According to the listing, it was for a podcast/YouTube show producer role at a company called Trudeau Consulting Training and Coaching. From what I could tell, they were looking for someone to produce, run, and ultimately improve what is called the Kevin Trudeau Show. The salary was listed at between $70,000 and $120,000 a year, based on experience, plus health, vision, dental, everything. Also included in the listing was this little gem. It said, "The Kevin Trudeau Show is a YouTube show and podcast. It's being relaunched. 15 years ago, The Kevin Trudeau Show had over 100 million listeners, viewers from around the world. They said that this person would do whatever it took to get the number of views and the number of subscribers up each week. They would be responsible for virtually everything." And then it went on. It had a lot of weird stuff in it. It said you had to dress for success. "If you think coming to work in a t-shirt, jeans, and sneakers is acceptable, don't bother to apply."
This is serious.
Stuff like that. So it was a little weird. The last thing it said, though, was the person must have a high level of integrity and honesty. Now, that last one isn't weird at all. In fact, that's something that I'd love to see mentioned as a highly valuable attribute on all job listings, wouldn't we? In this case, though, it stood out like a sore thumb. Allow me to explain, if you will. To prepare for what was actually the first interview turned out to be a group interview, and it wasn't an interview at all. It was more just a presentation and a talking to from Kevin Trudeau. And to prepare for it, the hiring manager sent us 13 different links to various websites, social accounts, and told us to review and study up on all of them. Pretty ballsy to do that when you notify people less than 26 hours before the interview, but I did as instructed. And to be totally honest, I always do research before any job interview, so this actually, in some ways, made it easier for me. Just consolidated all the information. I didn't have to gather it or go, you know, LexisNexising, Googling, anything like that. Here's the thing, though. It turns out they weren't providing these links just to be helpful and save us time. They were doing it to do exactly what I just said. I think they were doing it to hopefully prevent us from Googling the name Kevin Trudeau. And it almost worked, I'm embarrassed to say. Like, probably 9 hours before this interview, 9 to 11 hours before the interview, I was actually telling a friend of mine about it. And I was telling them everything about how the whole thing from the job description to the company websites and social media accounts, they just looked a little off to me. They seemed very weird and very almost cultish. Well, upon doing so, it didn't take my friend 5 seconds to come back at me with, Kevin Trudeau is a criminal.
What?
Like a convicted criminal, a former used car salesman, larceny, fraud, blah, 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 blah. Now, my immediate thought was, no, he's not. I thought she had to be mistaken. Clearly, there were multiple Kevin Trudeaus out there in the world, and she was reading about the wrong one. No, she wasn't. If you type the name Kevin Trudeau into any search engine on the planet, you don't get any of those glazing, glossy, glitzy, adoring sites that we were told to visit. No, you don't get any of that shit. If you Google this guy's name, you get stuff like this.
But here is the interesting part. While teaching people how to get rich, Kevin Trudeau says he is broke.
I gave away everything I own.
But the authorities say that is a charade. And earlier this summer, the hammer came down on this self-help empire. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
That's the kind of stuff you find. That's Nightline, folks. That's not like some podunk Kentucky news channel. That's a national broadcast. And there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. As it turns out, the reason the Kevin Trudeau Show is relaunching after 15 years is because he's been in prison.
Bing bong. Goodbye, sir.
He's been in prison. He's been actually on the run and in prison. He was in prison since 2014. He got out in 2022. So I guess the moral of the story is, how stupid was I to just take their links, even though they looked sketchy from the beginning, and not simply Google his name? But more than that, remember what I said this job was called?
No!
This is to be the producer of a podcast / YouTube show called The Kevin Trudeau Show at a company called Trudeau Consulting, Training, and Coaching. You got that? Kevin Trudeau Show. Trudeau Consulting, Training, and Coaching. Well, here's a little clip from an interview Mr. Trudeau gave back in 2013.
I'm screwed. I can't own anything for the rest of my life. So I'm not going to start a company and put it in my own name. It'd be dumb. And I certainly can go to friends, relatives, neighbors, and whatever and say, listen, you start a company and I'll help you out. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing illegal about it. And guess what? It ain't my asset.
The reason he's talking about his assets? Well, actually, wait a minute. Let's not bury the lead here. I'm not going to start a company. I can't own anything ever again. I'm not going to start a company and put it in my name. That would be smart, Kevin. That would be smart. As you just said on this interview, it'd be dumb. Do you know why it would be dumb? Kevin Trudeau had a judgment against him for like $38 million, none of which has been paid back. And the clip that you heard first of him claiming poverty, right, it's because he hasn't paid any of that money back. He actually went and named the show The Kevin Trudeau Show for Trudeau Consulting, Coaching, and whatever. I don't even know what to say. But here's my biggest question. It was actually, if I'm being honest, it was really disappointing, frankly, because, like I said, it looked like a dream job. It looked like a dream job. And so I wanted to believe it. I wanted to believe that there was someone out there willing to pay a podcast producer $120,000 a year. It seemed too good to be true. And I think it is too good to be true. My question is, he had a $37.6 million judgment against him. He just got out of prison in late 2022. The judgment remains unpaid, and he was held in contempt of court as recently as February 2023. So where the hell would any of this money be coming from for employees? If I ever did receive a paycheck, it would be seized by the government. I don't understand. By the way, he's written a lot of books like Debt Cures They Don't Want You to Know About. Maybe he should read his own book. I attended the interview just because I was now at that point morbidly curious. I just wanted to see what. And there he was. There he was. And he was asked at one point, like, do you have sponsors? Blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, no, of course, sponsors won't touch us. So how are they making money? He has said he's broke. He has, in fact, he better be broke because the government will come after his ass if he isn't. I don't know, folks. I will say this. So, again, morbid curiosity. I did the second interview today because it was with a production manager and not Trudeau himself. And I asked, I said flat up, I said, have you been being paid? I said, like, do you get paid regularly? Is there a pay, you know, does someone handle payroll? I want to know where that money's coming from. Oh, I don't know. Can you get any worse than this guy? Anyway, folks, I thought that was just very, That's what I've been up to. I have had other interviews, but still unemployed as I sit here today. Can you believe that? It's a tough world, folks. It's a tough world. All right, so that's what's going on in my world. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will welcome in John William Schiffbauer, the young Republican, making his return to the Next Best Thing for the first time in probably 4 or 5 years. A lot has happened since then, so there will be plenty to discuss. You're listening to The Next Best Thing on Radio Free Brooklyn, and we will be right back. Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. So, if you'd like to support our mission so we can continue to bring you quality community radio, we invite you to make a one-time donation or monthly pledge at radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. You can donate as little as a dollar, and every cent helps. Helps us to continue to stay on the air. So please, please help support independent community media by pledging whatever you can afford. And remember, RFB is a 501c3 nonprofit, so your contribution is tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Again, that's radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate.
This is the Next Best Thing.
All right. Well, welcoming back to the show, friend of the show, political consultant, former deputy communications director for the New York Republican State Committee. He's worked for multiple Republican campaigns at the state level and whatnot, written pieces for the Washington Times, Crane's New York Business, the New York Daily News, among others. John William Schiffbauer. John, thanks for coming back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Oops. Yep. Try again.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
It's been a while since I've had a live in guest.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so you're actually one of the first. So listen. So you're not working on any current campaigns, am I right?
About to get started. Oh, yeah, okay. About to get started.
But okay, so just some background, because you have been on the show before. It's been a long time, but as of right now, you are still registered as and still consider yourself a Republican, right?
That's correct.
Now, was that always the case, or is that something, or was it like an evolution? Do you remember when it kind of clicked, like, oh, if I'm going to be one of the two?
I started college at the, you know, a few weeks after my 17th birthday. And so I got to...
Early.
Yeah. And wow. So I got to... I sort of got jumped into the deep end of the pool with a lot of other in-classroom debate, because the whole college that I went to was in Western Massachusetts, and that's how they ran their classrooms. We were supposed to call our professors by their first name and engage in rigorous debate with our peers.
Like political debates, just
debates about literature, about, okay, you know, science, not necessarily, well, sometimes about science, depending on the science, but literature, politics, philosophy, that sort of thing. And so that's sort of how sort of the genesis of where my own personal, values and beliefs started. And so by the time I turned 18, I kind of had some sort of footing about where I fell on certain issues, and I just, Republican was
really
sort of, yeah, the closest to where I was.
Was it though?
Yeah.
What college was this?
It was called, it was called Simon's Rock. It's now Bard College at Simon's Rock.
Okay. Now, for the audience, to be clear, it's not like when you're a Republican, but you don't align with Trump, never have. As far as I know, you've never.
Still don't.
Yeah, right. You never have, never voted for him.
Nope.
So, okay. So can you define then kind of what are the core principles of your Republican Party?
For me, it's about free market capitalism with some regulations, because unfettered capitalism, mm-hmm, just like socialism, doesn't really work. Mm-hmm. And so you do need to have the government step in, because, you know, human nature inherently is not benevolent. Mm-hmm. And so there's that. And then interventionist foreign policy, because we are the only superpower out there still. And mm-hmm, if we don't defend and protect our allies, if we don't support NATO, who will? The whole thing could fall apart. Fortunately, Vladimir Putin is the best friend NATO has ever had. NATO has actually grown since, right, he attacked Ukraine.
Sweden, right?
Sweden, there's a couple more. I'm drawing a blank at the moment. But
not,
yeah,
Ukraine.
They all share a border with Russia. Really? So it's not exactly a surprise why they want some...
Okay.
Added security.
Okay. From what you've said already, I mean, there's a Democrat in power right now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider what we've been doing, which is providing aid. When you say intervention, do you mean stuff like that, or do you mean actually boots on the ground?
I think it depends on the circumstance. And I think the Ukrainians right now are saying, we don't need American troops. We don't need American, you know, we'll take any tanks that you're going to scrap,
right.
We'll take them, which is what we're doing.
And money.
Yeah. Well, we're not giving them
just cash.
Money. We're giving them the ability to buy material that we were going to decommission anyway.
Okay.
So that's where it's at.
And they're not part of NATO.
They are not.
Ironically.
Because if they were, then that would be World War III, because Russia would be attacking a NATO country.
We would have to put boots on the ground.
Yeah.
So
more likely probably ships and aerial support as opposed to
drones.
Drones, planes,
yeah.
Helicopters, but probably not troops.
But what you're describing, though, in other words, what Biden's doing,
I agree with what Biden's doing.
Right. And yeah. You can't see a Republican doing, what more could a Republican be doing? I guess giving more?
I mean, what more could the Republicans in Congress be doing right now? They could be greenlighting.
Well, that's not, yeah,
the bill. That's, I mean.
Well, that's okay. So
that's the only thing Republicans could be doing more of.
Well, that's what leads, okay, right. So in that way, that's a frustration you would have with your own party.
Correct.
Okay, so then when you see the evolution, like, do you think the principles of Republicanism, true Republicanism,
have changed and kind of gone off the deep end?
Hasn't it had to when all the top?
Well, both parties, and that's just the nature of political parties, is they evolve
the
Democrats are very different from what they were 100 years ago, just like the Republicans are very different from what
right,
they were
but I'm
100
talking about
years ago.
20 years ago.
20 years ago, I would say that the Democrats have evolved as well. They've on foreign policy, they've moved. Biden has moved. Biden and Obama have moved them closer to the right, and okay. Republicans have moved further to where the left was, especially where the left was during the Iraq War.
Wait,
Republicans are now very much after Donald Trump took over. Mm-hmm. That's what he's done. It was a hostile takeover of my party, and they came in, and now they're an isolationist party. There's a very strong Ron Paul element to the party now, which there didn't used to be.
Is he alive,
Ron Paul? I don't know. I don't really devote much of my gray cells to.
You know who we also haven't heard much from is his son, Rand Paul, which is probably
He pops up every time that there's a foreign aid bill because he's usually trying to filibuster against it.
Right. Right. Very un-Republican like.
But very much on brand for what the Republican Party is today.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So then I guess that leads to my question. And I know this is not necessarily what we came to talk about, but I just want to understand because I think a lot of people. Mm-hmm. At this point, especially, want to understand, because a lot of times I do hear people say, I just don't understand how anyone could be a Republican or anyone could be this or that. And you probably get that all the time.
I think it really depends on how loudly you are spouting the fact that you're a Republican.
Do you not?
For instance, folks who have become activists in the post-MAGA era, they're out there every day wearing the red hats, wearing the t-shirts, wearing the sneakers, doing everything they can possibly do to show everybody around them who they are and what they are. And by and large, that didn't used to be the case with Republicans. We keep it to ourselves. We don't talk about it at Thanksgiving. We don't talk, we save it for the voting booth or that we used to. I don't really get asked all that often. And when I do, I always say, well, first off, why I'm a Republican is also the reason why I have never and will not ever vote for Donald Trump. And that seems to make people kind of sit back, take a breath and say, okay.
Well, I think it used to. See, at this point now, there was a very short time. Didn't you actually, you resigned from your position with the New York State Republican Committee in response to his nomination-ish, right?
I did. It was the day after the Florida primary in March of 2016, and the writing was on the wall. Our state party convention was 2 days away, and I told my boss, the executive director and also our chairman, state party chairman at the time, that I'm not going to be a very helpful member of the team since he's going to be the nominee.
Now that's actually because that's really what piqued my interest because we had worked together and stuff, but we never really talked about this stuff until
sure.
I saw that. So would you do that again today?
I mean, I don't believe this, any state party would employ me as
really?
In communications, because you have to be, for the same reason, there was an article that came out about the questions that Mike Whatley or Chairman Whatley and co-chairwoman Lara Trump have been asking prospective staff members, and which is not unusual. They want to know that they're hiring people.
Hold on.
Yeah.
They are unusual. It is unusual.
The questions that they're asking prospective staffers are not unusual.
Lara Trump being appointed, that is unusual.
It would be considered unusual pre-2016, post-2016. No, that's just what the party has become.
That's what he does.
That's what he's turned the party into, yes.
But really just with him.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see other people putting their kids in like high level.
Well, this is the first time that the Republicans have nominated someone three cycles in a row, especially someone who lost the second time he ran. The only other since World War II, the only person, the only Republican who's appeared on a ballot the most has been Richard Nixon. And then
FDR, he was a Democrat.
He was a Democrat, but post World War II, Republicans nominated Nixon five times, or they nominated him twice for vice president and for president three times. And then George H.W. Bush was on a ballot four times, twice as vice president, twice as president. But this is the first time that for president, we've nominated someone three cycles in a row.
And you, based on our conversations, you've kind of surrendered to the fact that you think as long as he's alive, he will be nominated.
Absolutely.
In perpetuity.
As long as he can speak and has a pulse, the party will nominate him.
So with that, because the first time you came in, this was right after he was elected, and we talked about, and I think I asked you like kind of what you saw your role, or really the role of everyday Republicans at that point. And I think you said something, you know, generally speaking about lower level, I guess, Republicans doing the work, doing the good work, staying true to the principles and whatnot, and kind of hopefully overpowering, for lack of a better word, but kind of weeding out Trumpism. He's at the top. He's a caricature, really. And that if you could just kind of keep that resolve of the core Republican principles, hopefully you could endure whatever. But since then, it didn't take long.
Since then, we had a coup. An attempted coup, and in which a police officer was killed and several civilians were killed.
Well, that's the extreme. That's what it culminated to. But I'm talking about, like, you know, we've seen people like Paul Ryan, Liz Cheney, John Kasich, soon to be Mitt Romney. They've either left or were kicked out of politics. Liz Cheney. Who's more conservative than Liz Cheney? Honestly.
It's a very good question. I can't think of a...
And she got her ass kicked because Trump said to. Now, that's not a given. I mean, Trump was very much against the Georgia governor, and he won.
Well, what I admire, what I think a lot of people admire about Liz Cheney is that she didn't just, she saw the writing on the wall. She knew she was probably going to lose, but she ran anyway.
Right.
And that's something that I think and she, you know, made a lot of noise doing it.
And she still is.
Yeah. And I think that's something that Republicans, there aren't very many with the courage to be able to do that. Most people will either announce they're not running for re-election, or they'll, as Mike Gallagher didn't resign because he was going to lose re-election. He would have very easily won re-election. Mm-hmm.
And you still see people resigning from Congress.
Yeah.
Like today. I mean, it's like, they're not even waiting till the end of the term.
Yeah.
Now with all of that, with people leaving or getting kicked out, people resigning left and right, they've almost given up their majority. By this stuff. The majority is by one vote. Now.
Yeah, they're in danger of doing that. Yeah, sure.
With that stuff, does it concern you that since we talked in 2017, you've lost people like who we've talked about, and people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, and even like Carrie Lake in Arizona, they are rising up. If anything, it seems like Trump, even though it doesn't, besides his one win in 2016, it hasn't been massively successful, he seems to be trickling down. It's not the good stuff trickling up.
Yeah.
Does that concern you? Do you still think the party is salvageable?
I think the party is salvageable in certain states. I think there are some very good people at the state level and some in Congress, although that number is shrinking.
Because they couldn't stay.
Because either they've been there for a long time already. Hmm. There's folks that just, you know, it's a long commute. You're away from your family for 4 to 5 days out of the week.
And
at some point, and he's not
it?
A young, exactly. And figures, why am I wasting valuable, precious time I could be spending with my grandchildren or children, you know, family, when there's really nothing happening.
Nothing
it's,
good.
It's gridlock. Yeah, nothing good. And it's just all gridlock. We're not accomplishing what we all said we wanted to accomplish when we were campaigning to go to Washington.
Right. And now I sing no praises for Mitch McConnell, but he's stepping away too. And he is, if nothing else,
he's finishing out his term, but he's stepping down from leadership.
Right. And he's an old school Republican. He did pull some shenanigans, but we won't even get into that yet.
Well, I think there are only two people in the history of, well, not in the history of, but certainly since World War II, who have proved sort of a mastery of both the Senate rules and also
Mitch McConnell
never really broke them.
Well,
I would say Harry Reid broke the rules before Mitch McConnell did.
Changed them,
correct.
That would rather them change. At least you changed them and this isn't even breaking a rule, but if we're going to get into that, this, I know you're just going to say this is just politics and that was just gamesmanship or whatever. But especially in hindsight, given what's happened, stealing that seat from Obama with the sitting on it for a year.
You're talking about the Supreme Court?
Yeah. Sitting on it for a year and then 4 years later, rushing that Amy Coney Barrett nomination through when RBG died weeks before the election.
Well,
come on.
That's the fluke of the calendar. And if Barack Obama was really that vested in getting his court nominations, he should have campaigned harder for Democratic Senate candidates and won the Senate in 2014.
He campaigned for himself in 2008 and then again in 2012. If he was campaigning in 2014, there is some work to be done other than campaigning, right?
But that's his prerogative. Them's the rules, man.
Oh, but no, that's not.
You can't fault the guy for.
There's no. The rule is with what consent and whatever.
Well, the president nominates someone,
right,
and it's up to the Senate to confirm that person. Once you nominate someone, you're on the Senate's clock.
Yeah,
they're under no obligation to rush it through.
No one had ever done that before. Rush it through, and it was a year.
But that's. They're allowed to do, they're permitted to do that.
But they've never done it before.
If Chuck Schumer wanted to, let's say, nightmare fuel,
what,
if you will, Donald Trump gets elected president in November and Chuck Schumer stays Senate Majority Leader. And someone from the court, say Roberts or Alito, decides he's going to retire or passes away. Roberts also is not a young guy. He could, there could be a medical emergency.
Yeah.
Alito is definitely not a young guy.
Neither is
Clarence Thomas.
Hopefully.
Say a vacancy does occur, Chuck Schumer could absolutely sit on that for 4 years.
He should. At this point, he should.
There's nothing stopping him from doing that other than himself.
I don't think they would have even thought to do that back in the day. And I don't know that he would have the balls to sit on it for 4 years, but he should, don't you think?
That's entirely up to Chuck Schumer.
As a strategist,
I would say the game has changed. I would say that's entirely. It depends on what Chuck Schumer wants. He could hold that nomination fight in exchange for Trump's signature on some legislative boondoggle that Chuck wants signed. I mean, it's entirely up to him.
Yeah, of course it is. But I'm asking you, because let me ask you this.
I, of course, would not advise that Senate Majority Leader sit on a Supreme Court nomination for 4 years I would have advised Mitch McConnell. I mean, for Mitch McConnell, it was not even a year.
That's a long time.
It is a long time. And I think I personally would not advise that particular strategy, but I also understand the effectiveness of a strategy like that.
So you were surprised that he did that?
I was not surprised that he did that.
Oh, really?
Mitch McConnell, like Lyndon Johnson, is as ruthless as they come when it comes to playing the rules of the Senate for all that they can do.
All right, let's move on to the election and whatnot. So Republicans, interestingly, haven't been doing great nationally since really Trump entered the scene, and especially not since Roe versus Wade was overturned. There was a swing race in Alabama just the other night that the Democrat won by double digits.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't believe it. That's pretty crazy, right?
Well, I mean, who knew that there would be
a swing race in
Alabama? Who knew that the Democrats would have four U.S. senators, two from Georgia, two from Arizona? at this point. And who would have thought that Doug Jones would have been possible? Who would have thought that Republicans would nominate the, you know, the party of family values would nominate someone like Roy Moore?
Or Donald Trump.
I mean,
come on.
That's...
It seems like you're...
Yes, in theory, yes, but Roy Moore is so much worse than Donald Trump.
You really think so?
He's a convicted... There's evidence that he was a convicted pedophile.
I think they're both... Yeah, but Donald Trump is about to be a convicted... Not pedophile.
No. I mean, yes. They're both terrible, awful people.
Yeah.
But I think when the Alabama Republican Party is nominating someone who has gone after children, that's just... unbelievable that the Republican Party was willing to do that. And thankfully, the former Senator Cory Gardner, who was running the National Republican Senate Campaign Committee at the time, refused to endorse Roy Moore or send him money. And that was one of the last good things that the party under Trump was able to do.
Alabama.
Yeah.
Had a Democrat senator for a hot second.
Yep.
Okay, well, but despite all of this, now all of those indications would make you think this is great. Democrats are going to do great in 2024. But despite all of this, Trump's current poll numbers are still neck and neck with Biden. How would you explain that?
I would explain that by they're both. Trump is almost 80. Biden is over 80. Biden is incumbent. Trump is thought of as an incumbent since he already served a term as president. And people right now, they're...
What?
A
stupid?
Lot of, no, they're not stupid. They just don't know. They're not happy under Biden. The economy is getting better, but the perception of it is that it's not getting better faster. Hey, if you're living in Florida right now and you're trying to get home insurance or car insurance, that
better
is,
now than it was 3-4 years ago.
I wouldn't say it's better.
Wait.
Certainly 4 years ago during COVID, yes. I mean, if we're going to be calling COVID, but I'm talking about what people are seeing and feeling now is that it's too expensive to buy a house. It's too expensive to own a car. And
but I'm not even talking about Florida, I think, is Republican.
Well, that's just one example. But I mean, people are still talking about the price of groceries. And it's not even that because very generally speaking, wages have been keeping pace with inflation. But people are still getting the sticker shock of things are now when they go to the grocery store, when they go to the when they go to fill up their car with gas, when they go, you know, any time that there's any sort of engagement with basic everyday necessities, they get sticker shock from how much these prices are compared to 2 years ago. And that is, that is sort of kind of what we're seeing.
And I said stupid, and I was tongue in cheek, but truly, it is ignorance to not know the difference between like government caused inflation and just price gouging. I mean, really?
Who's price gouging?
Well, that's what a lot of the stuff that these, like the government, the president in particular, he doesn't control the price of gas.
Correct.
And so, but people blame him for it.
Right. I mean, and it didn't matter if it happened under Trump or under Biden. If gas went up, if the price of eggs go up, the person in the White House gets the blame, no matter what party or what person they are.
But the economy is, especially compared to other countries in terms of the post-COVID economy, is doing remarkably well.
Yes, absolutely. By the numbers, absolutely.
Yeah.
But again, you're asking, that's not what people are feeling. They're not looking at statistics on the Labor Department website. They're going by what they feel, what they see. And right now, that's a perception of high inflation and a sluggish economy.
Well, let me ask this. Okay, since it is a rematch of 2020, so when they ran in 2020, Biden was running as a former longtime senator, former vice president. He didn't have a presidential record to run on, but he had a long life in politics and people knew him. Trump had his 4 years, make of them what you will. And the result was the result. Big win. I think it was a big win for Biden. Since then, it's now the same two people. Biden has a 4-year presidential record to run on. And Trump, what has he added to his record? 91 felony charges. Mm-hmm. All these criminal indictments, he's lost that. He basically was found guilty or whatever, not criminally.
The E. Jean Carroll case.
Yep. So he's a convicted like sexual assaulter.
Yep.
Spurred the insurrection.
He's in the process of fighting. getting his businesses closed down in New York.
He did spurn the insurrection. He's really lost any sense of like trying to like keep his rhetoric within the realm of sanity. He doesn't even think about it. No, there's no reining him in for that. So what would people who didn't vote for him in 2020 suddenly see in him now and think, oh, he didn't have me in 2020, but he's going to win me over now?
Just by virtue of the fact that he's not Joe Biden. And that's, people are unhappy with Joe Biden for what we were just talking about earlier about perception of the economy, for
imaginary stuff.
People who pay attention almost on a daily basis to what's going on in our government, like you and I do, we see things differently. The majority of people who lives in Oklahoma or Kansas, mm-hmm. and, you know, their job is to work retail, or their job is, you know, they're a nurse in a hospital, or where they don't have to engage with politics every day, but they do engage with filling their car up with gas, going to the grocery store, taking their kids to the doctor, taking their elderly parents to the doctor. You know, these are all things that they are engaging with, yeah. and they're seeing that over the last 4 years, things for them have gotten more expensive and harder to do. And yeah. the person in the White House is Joe Biden, so that's who gets the blame.
I think that sentiment is certainly true. I think that happens to whoever's president. You know, whoever's president, yep. people, even if it's just kind of people being sick of the familiar, they want, you know what I mean? So I think that plays into it. But in terms of keeping them so close, I've had to question it more. And I think that, like, there's been a lot of debate about the accuracy of polling, particularly in recent elections, like with Hillary in 2016. That whole thing was very deceptive. Not obviously intentional.
The polling was on point, more or less. The one thing is that the undecideds, everyone just assumed the undecideds were going to break for Hillary, because how could they possibly go with Trump after the
Access Hollywood large leads.
I mean, in certain states, but
no,
in,
I mean like 538, New York Times, they were giving her like 86, 87.
Well, but you have to go by the states and not the nationals. Well, if you go by the states and look, I mean, 530, I'm sure they do aggregate statewide polling, but they also, I think what you're referring to, correct me if I'm wrong, was the national polling.
It was
their aggregate of the national polling is what you're referring to, right?
Well, I don't know how they put together like their overall polling on like the day of the election, before we get into the nitty gritty of it. But do you think, because one thing that I feel is at play here a little bit is the nature of polling and how they take these polls now, because a lot of them are cold calls. A lot of people don't answer unknown callers.
Well, but they also don't factor that into their polling data.
Right. Right, but they factor in who answers, and I think the people who answer often are older people.
But they also are looking to build, they have a model, and they're not going to stop a poll unless they fit their model.
But the people, I think, who respond to them, even if they say, yes, I voted for whoever, I don't even, because there was also that thing where people were like apparently embarrassed to say they were going to vote for Trump or whatever.
That's not the case anymore. If anything, I would suspect that there might be a slight oversampling.
I think it is huge. Not huge, but I think that just the people who are more easy to get, and I know that, like, I get it. I know it, like, the modeling, they're not going to put it out unless they fit the model, but they have to, the way that these polls are taken, plus, you know, like Rachel Bitticoffer, you've heard of her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a political strategist, data scientist. She's an author. She says that, and this was like 2 days ago, she was talking about this. She said that it's way too early for Democrats to worry about polling. She said that the vast majority of people, like everyday people, really don't pay close attention to news, generally speaking, certainly not political news. She said that really they don't tend to pay attention to politics until the very late summer, and that most polls don't mean much until Labor Day of the election year. Do you agree with that?
100%.
Really? So why even take them so early? Just because it's
interesting? People are paying you to do them. because what's going on right now is we're still in the middle of primary season. You know, primaries are going until June. And that's one of the things that I think is fueling more of an interest in polling right now. Cable news needs something to fill 24 hours.
Right.
So they're going to talk about the horse race.
Right.
But as we're seeing, Nikki Haley dropped out on March 5th, and she's still racking up hundreds of thousands of voters. And, I mean, these are likely all I mean, not, I say likely because there's, I can't gauge for certain how, why these people are voting, but it's very likely that these people since March 5th have all been voting to make it
clear,
make it clear that we are not voting for Donald Trump and we are Republicans. I'm not talking about places like New Hampshire or South Carolina where, or Wisconsin where that had open primaries. I'm saying we're seeing this. We saw this in Florida, Arizona, and last week in New York, all three of which are closed primaries.
Right.
And still one in five primary voters consistently have said they are not going to vote for Donald Trump.
And that would be encouraging to me if it wasn't for one factor, which we'll get to in a second. But it's a big one. So, but okay. So these current polls though, that's surprising to me and I'm kind of glad to hear it. So you think these polls are interesting, but ultimately when it comes to like utility and really veracity, not.
Well, national polls are of themselves meaningless. What they are good at telling you is the mood of the national electorate.
Okay.
So people right now, they're waffling. They're remembering that, you know, the economy from 2017 up until COVID was pretty good. And the majority of voters give
2017,
Trump.
Up until
COVID.
Oh, okay.
They remember that the economy was pretty good.
Okay.
And the majority of voters are giving Trump a pass on COVID, which, you know, for reasons passing, not reasons passing understanding. For people like you and me, that is the test of a president, is can they handle a once in a generation, once in a century crisis? And Trump very much failed that crisis.
When you say
which is part of the reason why he lost re-election. But voters are willing to give him a pass because they see that as out of any president's control.
Okay. But all the other stuff. But okay, but wait, when you think about, you said they remember the economy was pretty good up until COVID. Don't you think if they're smart enough to remember that they should be smart enough to know that the economy is pretty good now?
Well, but you're making it a case of smart and stupid, and
term, but I just mean plugged in enough.
Since we're sitting here in Brooklyn, it's all about vibes. It's you know, they were feeling the economy back in from 2017 to COVID, and they're not feeling the economy.
What was
now.
The difference?
The difference was there wasn't high inflation, interest rates were still at record lows, and
they're going down.
And
so is inflation, or at least steadying.
Yeah, I mean, well, because wages are rising. But I mean, we'll see what happens with supply chain after Baltimore. That's going to be interesting to watch.
And who's holding up that funding? Unbelievable.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So then, but ultimately, so you don't think that Democrats should look at the national polls now and be freaked out.
Anyone listening to your show hasn't already, there's a little website called realclearpolitics.com.
Yeah.
I do not work for them. Just, you know, full disclosure. It's
a little right leaning.
What they have is they have a very clear, easy to navigate website, and you can go there and you can see any poll that's been conducted in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And what they do is they aggregate it, but they also have state by states. Mm-hmm. And those are the important ones. If any state by state polling done for Georgia, Wisconsin, Arizona, Pennsylvania. And the other thing that I think people should bear in mind is that since 2018, swing states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona
have given, those are the new map.
Georgia aside, those other states have given Republicans a huge boot. And especially for the first time in 50 years, the Michigan state legislature is entirely controlled by Democrats. That is huge.
Yeah. In Michigan, though, there's apparently a lot of protest votes because of Ukraine.
Well, not because of Ukraine, because of Israel and war in Gaza. Right. But I think you'll see the majority of those folks, anyone who's protesting, who's doing the Rashida Tlaib protest, you know, vote uncommitted or unrestricted, or uninstructed, I'm sorry, vote uninstructed. I think those people, by and large, will come home to the Democrats once they're forced to make a choice.
Right. Well, okay, but to be clear, though, it's not just the polls, which are good and which are bad. It's also just the timing. The fact that people don't tend to really plug into news and politics until...
It's always been that way, though.
Right, but I just mean for people to know that and keep that in mind when they see these early polls. They're not, you know, they're not necessarily taking things into account, like likely voters, weighting, modeling.
Right, all these polls are predicated under the belief that if the election were held today,
yeah,
which it
It isn't. Okay, so let's talk about third-party shenanigans. There's been a lot of talk about who RFK Jr. will hurt more and who he takes more votes from, Biden or Trump. You know, on the one hand, he's historically a Democrat. He comes from an extremely famous Democratic family, all of whom have spoken out against his campaign, by the way. But at the same time, he appeals significantly to anti-vaxxers and, you know, a significant portion or elements of the right wing. I personally don't think there's any question about this. I think any third party candidate is going to hurt Biden more than Trump. Because when you talk about, like, okay, we were just talking about Michigan, but I think someone like RFK could give people an out to not vote for Trump, but think they're doing a protest thing or something like that. You know, third party candidates have always, in every single presidential election where there's a significant third party candidate, they've always hurt somebody. Usually Democrats. Ross Perot hurt George H.W. Bush. Ralph Nader hurt Al Gore. And Jill Stein and your guy.
Well, Gary Johnson in 2016, who was the Libertarian nominee, he pulled that, like, his 5%. I think he got 5% nationally. That all came from Trump. Those were all disaffected Republicans.
Well, Jill Stein then. The margin that Hillary lost Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan were Jill Stein voters. I mean, it was razor thin, and it made a difference.
Well, I think they're one of the things, like, if we want to talk strategy for a second, mm-hmm. I think it's electorally, it's politically negligent for the Biden campaign to not have the first black woman to serve as vice president. Why aren't they sending her to Philadelphia? Why aren't they sending her to Detroit? Why aren't they sending her down to Charlotte, North Carolina? Mm-hmm. All of these places with lots of young, multicultural voters, and especially in Philadelphia and Detroit, where you have some of the largest concentration of black voters, Democratic black voters. And if Biden can't turn those out, I think I just saw a poll. I can't remember which. I'll try to find it. There was a poll that said Donald Trump is winning over nationally 23% of black voters right now. That is unheard of if that is an actual trend.
I think the crosstabs, like when you see stuff like that, that seems so anomalic or whatever, anomalous, that like you have to wonder if that's like what the modeling is. What's the, you know, like,
because it's the first time I've seen a double digit number. And so it could very well be an anomaly. That's why I say let's wait and see if it is a trend, because like Hispanic voters are trending Trump. That is something that has been going on for quite a while now. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing that because Hispanic voters, by and large, so Pew Research did an extensive study on this last fall. Hispanic voters are now, you know, the people who were the sons and daughters of immigrants, you know, they're now approaching their late 30s, early 40s. Mm-hmm. And they no longer identify as immigrants. They identify as working class Americans, and the majority of whom English is a first language. Mm-hmm. And they're part of the people who are saying, you know, the economy was pretty good, you know, back before COVID, and I'm not feeling quite so hot about the economy now. And that's the main issue.
I'm not feeling. It's just so.
Oh, I know.
All right. But okay. But back to RFK. Do you think
he has to get on the ballot first?
Yeah, but he will. I mean, like,
that's certainly not a given.
Don't think so?
He's
only on it in Utah right now.
Yeah, that's like we're talking. This is the other reason why a major third party initiative has never taken off in this country. You need, like, if you got a spare billion lying around, sure.
Yeah, but
you
can now do he's that. Got his new running mate.
He's also missed deadlines in certain key states. He's very likely not going to make upcoming deadlines in some other states.
So you don't think he's going to be a significant factor?
I think he'll be a significant factor depending on where he ends up on the ballot.
And all that matters is Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania.
Well, the big swings over the last, if you're looking at it from 2016 to now, the states that have decided elections or have swung between Democrats and Republicans from the presidentials to the midterms, it's going to be Michigan, Wisconsin, Michigan less so, but I would definitely say Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, and possibly North Carolina.
You think, really?
Possibly.
You think that could go blue?
Yeah, it's possible. It went blue in 2008.
So did Indiana.
And they've had Democratic governor for the last 8 years. They've got a very strong candidate running for governor this year, and Republicans have nominated an absolute lunatic to run for governor this year. And there can be some, it'll be interesting to see if Biden is able to take advantage of that up ballot.
Kansas has a Democratic governor. You think that might go blue?
At the presidential level, I doubt it.
Zero.
But North Carolina is a very different state. You've got in North Carolina, there's a lot of people like
it's
us.
Just different,
there's, you know, the millennials are grown up now, and it's very easy. It has been very easy to buy a house and, you know, settle down in North
Carolina.
You know
what I will say, and this is interesting. My county in Kansas had been just as red as the rest of the state. It went blue, I think, in 2016, and I was surprised it stayed blue in 2020. Who knows if it'll stay, but even little things like that are different. I mean, it's like to see that tide turning a little bit. But RFK, what is he doing? Why is he doing, okay, Fran Lebowitz, have you heard of her?
Yes.
She's like she's a writer. She's like a, you know, social commentator. She was doing an interview recently and someone asked her this question about third parties, if she's worried about it. And she was like,
I mean, I don't know what happened. I used to be friends with Bobby. He's gone literally crazy. People use the word crazy all the time. They don't really mean it. But I mean, people go, what happened to Bobby Kennedy?
And what's the answer?
I have no idea. But he seems to have gone nuts.
I don't know what he used to be like. But I know he's a lawyer. He did a lot of great work for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been, you know, the whole vax thing. You can see what he said. It's all on tape. You hear what he says now, but then he'll pepper in some anti-vax stuff. But the point is,
I think I think it's right for the Biden campaign to be concerned about any third party.
Mm-hmm. Especially a Kennedy. I don't know. That's a big name.
Yeah, there's some sticker shock for the name, but there's no real evidence that will translate into votes. And there's no real evidence that any third party will ultimately translate into votes. But it would be a serious dereliction of duty if the Biden campaign were not concerned about it.
It sounds like if you had to guess, do you think he'll be on the ballot in November in all of those states you mentioned?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure he's already missed the deadline in a few of them. I'd have to double check. Yeah.
Missed the deadline?
Because he doesn't have the money.
But
you have to get X amount of signatures depending on the state. Some states it's very low threshold, some states a very high threshold. And if you don't have the money to pay people to go out and get people to sign your petitions, you're not going to make the ballot.
So his running mates, he put out there that he was considering Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, wrestler, independent, off-the-grid guy, NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers. These weren't jokes. He was serious. And he ended up going with the former wife of the founder of Google. What's her name?
Well, she was also Nicole Shanahan.
It is
Google.
Yeah,
Google.
Yeah, okay.
But she was already one of his major donors. She funded that, the Super Bowl ad.
And, oh, yes, she did.
I mean, he picked someone ultimately
picked
from his inner circle.
Who has billions of dollars.
Correct. Yeah. And also probably because no one else that he floated wanted it.
Well, and what in the world are you talking? Aaron Rodgers? He's an active NFL player. To me, if I'm seriously running a political campaign, doesn't matter the party, doesn't even matter the level, putting something out as off the wall as that, it's like, don't you want to be taken seriously?
I think you just answered your own question there, Jonathan.
Well, no, to me, that's how I feel. I think hopefully people feel that way, but he's not running as a joke.
He's also not taking his campaign very
seriously. You don't
think so?
What's the point? Why is he doing this?
He's doing it because he can.
You really think he's that callous?
You don't run for president if you don't have an ego. And
of course.
He's a Kennedy. And
yeah.
I don't really lose a lot of sleep over trying to get inside the brain of Robert F. Kennedy.
See,
Jr.
I do worry about it, though, because I think Jill Stein. Jill Stein was, I was thinking, okay, she's
But these are all people who are not going to vote for the Jill Stein voters are people who are never going to vote for a major party candidate ever in their lives.
You don't think
never
they just won't vote?
Never. No, they'll vote for Jill Stein. I think she's the Green Party nominee again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. that's why it's so crucial that the Biden campaign turn out their base voters in Philadelphia in the suburbs, Pittsburgh in its suburbs, any urban and suburban area that has a lot of concentrated Democrats and or a lot of concentrated independents,
yeah,
and get them to vote for Biden on Election Day. That's the only, yeah, way, by juicing up your own numbers, it's the only way you beat back threats from the 1% to 2% of people who are going to go to RFK Jr., wherever he's on the ballot, or Jill Stein.
Okay, so I haven't actually been paying much attention to Kamala's schedule. Why hasn't she been out more, do you think?
I have absolutely no idea.
But there has to be something. The reason.
I think they have dramatically underused her as vice president. I'm not sure, mm-hmm, what the reason is.
Do you think
she's not as, I'm surprised that her sort of, the way she's been put out to the public as, mm-hmm, vice president really has been,
it's hurt her.
Veep. It's been,
yeah, it's hurt her.
Yeah. And she, I don't understand how they allow that to happen when you have, yeah, the top talent of the Democratic Party at your disposal to write her speeches, to keep her informed issues.
It's not like she ran her own campaign and she did pretty well, and he picked her. I mean, like, it's, yeah, not like,
and she gave her best moment of her presidential campaign was her kickoff, and she did very well at that kickoff.
And she then did well it was all
the downhill trajectory from there. Yeah, she did okay at the debates, but Tulsi Gabbard just
I meant the actual debate against Pence.
Oh, against Pence, sure.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that no one remembers it means she did fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, I don't know. That is strange.
It is strange.
Okay, so Gabriel Sherman, he just put a piece out in Vanity Fair. It's called Inside the Terrifyingly Competent Trump 2024 Campaign, highlighting a bunch of the differences between his campaign in 2020 versus now. He was on Morning Joe today, talking about some of the points. Here, just listen to some of it, and then we can get your thoughts.
That's right, Mika. You know, everyone here on the show has been covering Trump for years. And the big story in 2016 and to some extent 2020 was that his campaign was a soap opera. It was clashing personalities. It was nonstop drama. And covering this cycle, the thing that I've been struck by time and time again is that it's really a low drama campaign. These are operatives who are focused, who don't want press, who don't want their egos out there. They are focused on getting Donald Trump into the White House in November 2024. Because as I write in the piece, his freedom is at stake. Really, the only thing that is guaranteed to keep Donald Trump out of jail is becoming the next president of the United States and appointing an attorney general who will get these charges thrown out. It's really that simple. And I think that is really why you see Donald Trump so focused. And yes, he says incendiary things on the stump, but when it comes to the mechanics of running the campaign, it is a much different operation.
So I agree with the last part about him being running for his life. I think the only reason he really wants to be president again is to get out of all this legal trouble. But everything else about being much more focused and much more like competent, are you seeing that?
I would say the campaign is much more focused and is, I would actually agree with everything he said about the low drama-ness of it.
Well, what was so dramatic? I mean, like, could it
be? In 2016, he cycled through, how many campaigns.
In 2020.
It was just kind of a mess because they were dealing with COVID. He went through, I think, two or three campaign managers before settling on Bill Stepien.
Now?
There's two people. It's Susie Wiles, who is a big Florida establishmentarian. She worked for the Bushes. She worked for Ron DeSantis until Ron DeSantis' ego. Yeah. And
really?
So that was part of the reason why she went to work for Trump, was to torpedo Ron DeSantis, or at least part of the motivation.
Torpedo him.
To torpedo DeSantis.
I was saying vice versa.
And then stomp on his grave.
But okay, so, but what good?
And then Chris LaCivita, who is a very seasoned political
operative.
But
what good is a, I mean, like Kellyanne Conway in 2016, she focused it enough to win.
At the very tail end of it, yeah. Sure. But there were like five campaign managers before her.
But I thought what she did with him was get him to temper his rhetoric enough, streamline it enough, or at least to even take the things he does say, and as incendiary as they are, like the locker room talk. Okay, so taking that tape where he said the infamous grab him by the you-know-what and calling it locker room talk, that is something I don't think he would do now. I think he would just be like, yeah, you know, they are so PC. Like, he's so combative. It is always a fight. It is always, they're out to get me. They'll, you know, they're trying to get me down. take me down. I am your retribution. What is it? So the campaign, it might be more competent.
The party has shifted because back in 2016, you know, you had, after the Access Hollywood tape, you had Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. You had Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, all denouncing him. There was serious talk about getting him booted from the ballot. And now he doesn't have to win over the party establishment because he is the party establishment. Uh-huh. So it, and the voters have moved with him. They've moved away from needing to clean up a gaffe, however large or small it may be.
I don't think it is a gaffe. I think he meant what he said. He said what he meant.
Well, a gaffe is always, in politics, it's always when you say the truth out loud. But
well, Joe Biden, well, maybe. Joe Biden has gaffes, real gaffes.
Yeah. But you know, but at this point, the party has moved away from away from having to try to come up with a reason to excuse something like the Access Hollywood tape.
Okay, so it might be a more competent campaign, but I would argue it's a more unelectable candidate somehow. Because he's got all those charges. He's got all these trials coming up. He's got all this, you know, the insurrection and stuff. Like, he's much more, there's a lot more. He had a lot of baggage to begin with. There's
but he's also
now
getting, because of all of his legal troubles, I mean, we were talking about the free media ride he got in 2016. He's getting another big free media ride out of all of the legal coverage.
Annoying.
And he's
different, though.
Raising, and all of he claims, we'll see what the campaign finance filings show.
Yeah.
He claims he had a $50 million fundraiser in Florida. All of that, of course, is going to go to pay his legal fees.
For all of, yeah.
But, I mean,
he also claims that Truth Social is worth billions and billions of dollars.
Sure. and speaking of Truth Social, I think that's another reason why people aren't as offended by Trump as they were while he was president, because he hasn't been active on Twitter, because I believe he's got an exclusivity clause with Truth Social.
And no one's on.
Right, exactly.
Except for his ardent supporters.
Right.
Yeah. Do you think that, what do you think it says about, speaking of those criminal charges? What do you think it says about our criminal justice system, how he has managed to successfully stall and delay until truly some of them, most of them, in fact, we'll be lucky if one of them happens before the election. That could not happen for virtually anybody else. I couldn't do that. If I was charged with a crime as, let's say, the Georgia interference case, anything that...
Or committing $454 million worth of fraud.
Or stealing classified documents.
Mm-hmm.
Those are serious crimes.
Sure.
I could do my legal whatever, but after a certain point, it would never be, like, I wouldn't be able to play these games.
Well, I think he's, I mean, anyone who, there's been so much written about Donald Trump, so anyone at this point, if you haven't even just done a cursory glance of news articles or books that have been written about the history of Donald Trump and the Trump family, they have made a career out of gaming the legal system.
That was mostly
forever.
Civil.
That's part of the reason why. Well, but that's part of the reason why, you know, he filed for bankruptcy four times. He doesn't have any active casinos, I don't think.
No.
And anyone who was a subcontractor on any of his buildings, he's screwed over and at times hasn't paid them, and they've never gotten their money. And that's largely due to the fact that he knows how to game the legal system.
But like, okay,
he's been doing it forever.
Let's just say, same case. Let's just use this New York hush money one. Let's say it's the exact same charges, all the same people, except it's me, not Trump. No lawyer, like the thing they put in today, trying to appeal to the appeals court, trying to say that Judge Mershon should be recused from the case because of some imaginary bias, and he also wants to move it out of New York City.
No, I believe that the judge just ruled that can't happen.
Well,
He didn't want to move it out of New York City. He wanted to move it out of the borough of Manhattan and into Staten Island, just because trying to make the case that the jury, there's no way they could get an unbiased jury.
Okay, but they've done so much of this stuff already. Eventually, my lawyers would look at me and say, "I'm not going to put my name on. Like, I can't. We can't do this."
Well, the difference is that they're defending
a
radio host as opposed to former president of the United States.
But the difference also is they're going to lose unless they're going to lose. So it's just a matter of putting your name on some of these like legal arguments about the immunity stuff. What lawyer? I can't believe, how could you?
Well, in this country, everyone has a right to counsel, and lawyers, I think the only lawyer so far in any of Trump's legal proceedings that I think has embarrassed herself by being overtly political has been Alina Haba.
What about Judge Cannon? and it's not a lawyer.
I think Jack Smith is a smart enough prosecutor that if he felt that Judge Cannon was hindering his case.
Incompetent.
I wouldn't use that word. I would use the word hindering. If he felt she was hindering the case, there are many legal tools at his disposal with which to get her removed. And he hasn't felt the need to do that yet. I hope he doesn't.
I think he will. I think that the thing she did with the, like, give me jury instructions, both sides give me jury instructions before there's the court date set. That is so off the wall.
Jack Smith is a smart and savvy prosecutor, yeah. and I trust his judgment more when it comes to calling into question Judge Cannon's judgment, that I'm willing to trust Jack Smith on that as opposed to.
But as someone who, I would think, as someone who has stayed tried and true to the Republican Party, don't you want him to go away, whether it's facing accountability?
Yeah, I would love that. I just don't think it's going to happen.
You don't think what?
Even if he gets convicted and goes to jail, he can still become president potentially in November. Just being convicted of a crime doesn't bar you from. Eugene Debs ran for president from jail
and had no chance and didn't get hardly any votes.
Regardless, being in jail does not mean you can't get elected president.
Okay, listen, we have 12 minutes left. I want you just to humor me here for a second, because if we take a step back, we've been talking about the nitty gritty about certain states, certain elections, certain people. But if we take a step back and we look at how politics in America works, is constructed, is built to work, everything we've been talking about up to this point, all the fear and all the games being played and everything that could happen come November, this could all be null and void if there were a few changes to our process. Now, I know you're thinking that's not going to happen. Why even talk about it? But I think in general, it's a question worth at least thinking about. One of the craziest things, you know, we could talk about gerrymandering, we could talk about judges, lifetime appointments, we could talk about all sorts of stuff. But one thing that to me is the most outrageous and kind of totally nonsensical aspect, can you guess? The Electoral College. Now, I will never forget being in the sixth grade when Bush v. Gore went down and hearing from like teachers how Al Gore got 544,000 more votes, but somehow lost. And just thinking as a, you know, 11, 12 year old, that can't be like, how does that make sense? And all the explanation they gave us at the time was like, well, you know, this is an anomaly. It's really never happened before. It'll probably never happen again. And all of that was true at the time. It really had. I don't think it had ever happened before. Had it?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. But then we skip ahead 16 years. It happens again, much larger margin. Hillary gets almost 3 million more votes, somehow loses. Now, Jamie Raskin, I think, makes very cogent and kind of infallible arguments about it.
I don't believe in the Electoral College. I'm with Thomas Jefferson, who said it was an ink blot on the Constitution. The whole election comes down to a handful of states. I think it's a profoundly undemocratic practice and institution, the way that it's evolved over the centuries, like other anti-democratic institutions we've left behind, like the state legislatures choosing U.S. senators, something that we got rid of in the 17th Amendment. What are the basic problems with the Electoral College? Well, one is that it doesn't follow majority rule. So it's not the way we elect U.S. senators, representatives, mayors, governors, anybody else. In all of those other elections, the only question is who got the most votes. The second problem with it is that it is profoundly polarizing and dividing for the country. If you're running for president on the Republican side, you're basically saying, how do I go out and make sure I can win the red states and a handful of purple states? If you're running on the Democratic side, you're saying, how can I hold the blue states and get a handful of purple states? And then it marginalizes the vast majority of the country because most people live in safe red states or safe blue states, and there's no campaigning there.
Just rationally, why the Electoral College exists are reasons. It was really a compromise because Congress was going to pick the president and people wanted a vote. So the Electoral College is really a compromise to let the people have some input, but not direct input, choice.
I mean, the Electoral College was meant to be a check and a balance. It was never, I mean, we never had popular elections for president for, I believe, almost the first 100 years of the Republic, or up until Andrew Jackson, I think.
What do you mean? You mean like they weren't even tallied?
Individuals. They voted for their state legislature. State legislature.
Right.
And it was trickle up instead of a trickle down effect when it comes to voting. And so you had the U.S. Senate, and you know they basically elect in the House. You know they would all elect whoever the president and vice president would be, and oftentimes it was just the two top vote getters. So imagine. We could, going by those old rules, we could have a President Joe Biden and a Vice President Donald Trump
and
right
a President Trump and a Vice President and
Hillary Clinton.
That would have been, well, in a weird way, I almost feel like that would have been, I would love to think that she's in there kind of trying to, but he wouldn't have listened to her. But
well, her only constitutional duty would have been to have a pulse
and to do that.
She wouldn't have and to tie break in the Senate. That's
or
it.
And to do the electoral like do what he didn't want Mike Pence to do on January 6th,
which Mike Pence
I will say, so I know, and I know that your tendency is, yeah, this is a hypothetical, why even talk about it? But I will say that would your, because in the last eight presidential elections spanning over 31 years, Republicans have won the popular vote one time.
Mm-hmm.
If that were the other way around, do you think maybe you'd feel a little more open to the idea?
No. I mean, I think the Electoral College,
you think it
if
still
we didn't,
serves
if we didn't have the if we didn't have the Electoral College, why would you campaign in Kansas? Why would you campaign in Iowa? You would be in,
they don't.
You would
what
be
do you
in
mean?
New York. What do you mean they don't? Of course they do.
If we didn't have the Electoral College, you think there Biden's
would be no
gonna-
reason there would be no reason for anyone to go out into rural communities. There would be everyone would be Biden, in the cities and the suburbs because that's where all the votes are.
But wait, the way it's set up, they only go to like 5-6 states anyway.
Well, you have to get to 270, and but again, the swing states of today are dramatically different from the swing states of 2000, which were dramatically different from the swing states
were
of
they?
1980.
I mean, like Florida.
Yeah.
Florida's not really, I don't consider it a swing state.
It's, I would say, I mean, up until 1992, California voted Republican.
But wait a minute, either way, we're talking about it coming down to 5 states in a state of 50 plus.
Right,
Puerto
but it's
Rico.
Always it's always been that way, though. It's just the states change that end up getting whomever is running to 270.
But like you, for example, you talk, well, but what? I mean, like, because you talk about, because I always ask you, you know, like, about your voting and who you're going to push for and stuff, and you always talk about how your vote doesn't matter, your vote in New York.
Right.
And I feel the same way, but for the blue vote, if I voted in Kansas, I'd feel a little better thinking it mattered, but it wouldn't really matter because it was going to go red. Why would it be a bad thing? Just like the states, there are times when we vote as one state to vote, elect the governor. Mm-hmm. And then there are times when we vote as one country to elect the president. Why should it be so different?
Because
you really believe this?
Because populations shift, you know? Wisconsin didn't used to be a swing state.
But
what
I'm talking about, if we just,
and that's because
none
you
of
have,
that would matter.
Well, but I think it does, because you have people, our generation growing up, our values are different from our parents, which are different from their parents. And so where we want to go and live, where we want to go and work, mm-hmm. the careers we want to have take us to different parts of the country.
Yeah.
And so the populations are going to shift. And so where our politicians who are running to represent all of us should reflect
that. I'm talking about the president. Because what you're talking about is like where our...
There was 20 years ago, no Democrat would consider going and campaigning in Georgia and Arizona.
Yeah.
And now those are the places that are hinging the election.
But now that's one of the only places they go.
Georgia and Arizona. Well, but it used to be Ohio and Florida. And it used to be, New Hampshire used to be much more of a swing state than it is now.
I don't like that it comes down to 5 states every cycle, regardless of what 5 states they are. I think it should be.
But then if you're looking at the just purely the popular vote,
right.
You're just going to go to big cities and the suburbs of those big cities.
Great.
You're going to ignore everybody in between.
It's
I think that's bad.
I don't think it's ignoring them. I think if you go, first of all, because right now you're talking about going to the big cities. They're not going to Birmingham, Alabama. They're not going to Austin, Texas necessarily.
Well, but
maybe
they will. They would have to.
And so it'd be more. You'd get spread out and go to more states.
But at the same time, the values that those candidates are going to reflect are going to be the values of the people who live in big cities, who live in suburbs of big cities. And that's not necessarily, that means ultimately people who
but it's the same
work are
candidates.
People who do, well, but
either
no,
way.
Because they're going to have to win over, they're going to be targeting those specific urban and heavily in metropolitan, rather, metropolitan voters. And that's not necessarily, there's more people in the country than that.
But that always, that still happens. People in Austin, Texas, Austin goes blue, rest of Texas goes red.
Right, which should tell you that the majority values of Texas are not the majority values of Austin.
Okay.
And that's part of what I'm trying to get at.
But like, but it's still going to be Biden and Trump on the ballot.
Right.
So we're it's still coming down to those two people. You, it sounds like you're trickling this down to like their, like that's why they
it's
have
trying
their
to
local
make sure,
officials.
It's trying to make sure that minority voices and minority values, wherever, whatever constitutes a minority, like for instance, the minority values of Texas are more likely closer to the majority values of New York, but they still get a fair shake in Texas.
But it's still their president.
Right, but I'm just saying that you're going to get a much broader representation amongst the candidates and speaking to issues that matter to people who don't live in big cities, who don't live in the suburbs of big cities. And that, I think, is just as important as everything else that you're talking about.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding, because it sounds like you are arguing for why the minority should matter as much or more than the majority of the country.
That's how our political system is structured.
Does that make any sense? This is one country.
That was the point. That was the point of how the founding fathers designed our Constitution to work.
That was for parts where like literally nobody lived.
Well, but it was to make sure that, you know, the reason we have the Senate structured the way it is versus the way we have the House of Representatives structured the way it is, which is obviously modeled on the British Parliament. And it's to make sure that every locality, no matter how small, no matter how, you know, whether you live in a state that has 20 million cows and three people, or a city that's got 50 million, or a state that's got 50 million
people,
you have an equal voice in government at the national level.
Does that make sense? Now, I'm not even against the Senate system. Bill Maher is, he thinks South Dakota should.
Oh, I think I would love to. I mean, if I had my way, I'd abolish the House and keep the Senate.
No.
Yes, I mean, if you want unfettered dictatorial powers of John William Schiffbauer, that's what I would do.
But it sounds like you are making the case for, because you know,
the Senate's the one that has passed in a huge bipartisan fashion immigration reform like three times.
No, that's, now we're shifting, though.
I'm saying the Senate has been the responsible voice in government.
But
so
I'm just talking about the representing the people. Now, they send their congresspeople, they send their senators, they also have their, you know, state legislators and governors. So those votes aren't going to change those values and those kind
of. But the point is that it's all, I mean, you're talking about the national popular vote. The Electoral College is based on population. Each state is allocated electoral votes based on how many people. It's why we have a census every 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so the only difference between what I'm advocating for and what you're advocating for is that the two people of the major parties, would end up, if it was purely by national popular vote, would only go to where the population centers are.
We could argue this.
And their platform would then respect only those people.
Yeah. Well, I wish I'd brought this up earlier because we could argue about it forever.
Sure.
But we're going to run out of 10 seconds. So thank you for coming in and coming back on the
always
show.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, John.
And give your Twitter handle real quick before we run out of time.
It's at JWSGOP.
All right. Good night, folks.
If you enjoy this show, please remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or whatever it's called. We're also available on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, TuneIn, basically wherever podcasts are found. If you can find podcasts there, you can find us there. Follow us on Twitter. We're at
Next Best Radio. That's at Next Best Radio.
And of course, feel free to follow me. I'm at JONB as in boy, LERNER. That's JON, no H. B as in boy, LERNER. That's my handle on Twitter, Instagram, all that fun stuff.
This is the next best thing.
Don't go.